Hello, and welcome to episode 80 of the Blue Cup Tools podcast. I am Francisco Gonzalez, also known as Grunislav, and with me as always...
Hello!
I am Ben Chandler.
You're excited, aren't you?
Well, you did a big hello, so I wanted to do a big hello.
I always do a big hello.
Well, I wanted to do one as well now.
Okay, well, good. How are you?
I'm good.
Yeah, good.
How are you?
I'm alright. I've had a bit of a late night last night, which you probably hear in my voice, but I'm doing alright aside from that. Been busy, working and editing and all sorts of other things, as have you, from what I understand. Well, you've been busy drawing.
Well, I haven't been editing, but no. I've been drawing.
Yeah,
I don't do the voice editing.
No, I know.
Yes, I have been.
Yes. Yeah, so, in other words, we haven't podcasted in a while because of that. We've both been very busy. So, that's...
We have been very busy. I've been playing music again.
Yeah, you have.
And so I haven't been around as much on the weekends, which is ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, whatever. And, you know, it's alright. We have... Ooh, stretch. I'm like a cat.
Well,
I said like a cat. Remember that. Anyway... so yeah, let's get right into our podcast.
Let's get on
with the show. Who says that?
Not us.
Is that like
until now?
Oh no, yeah. Thankfully, because it's kind of weird. But anyway,
it's a little cheesy, but it's not that bad. It's a little corny, but you know, I don't mind it.
If there are two adjectives that in the vast number of adjectives that I would use to describe us. I would rank cheesy and corny in there somewhere, to be honest.
So they're both things you could describe meals with.
That's true, too. Mm. That's very true. I mean, I love cheese, as do you, and corn's pretty good.
Corn's delicious. Corn's delicious. Are you kidding me?
Yeah. It's been a while since I had any. But anyway, so what do you...
No, sweet corn's delicious.
Yeah, not really that big a fan of, like, creamed corn. Sweet corn.
Not whatever. Cream corn, like on the cob, dude.
Oh, well, on the cobs.
Why would you eat cream corn? That's like you've already eaten it, then put it in a tin, then eaten it again.
Yeah, I don't like cream corn. I'm glad we can
agree
on this.
Well, I'm not saying that. I'm saying sweet corn.
Okay, good. I was just making sure. Sometimes you have weird names for things. I just wanted to make sure for... Well, that's my xenophobia out of the way. Let's move into the part of our podcast that always takes the longest when we haven't podcasted for a bit. What have you been playing?
I've been playing nothing. Your turn.
That's a lie. You've been playing lots of things.
That's a big lie.
That's the biggest lie.
Lots of things.
I know.
I don't know where to start because I can't remember what I did last time, but I've been playing Persona 4 Golden on Vita, if I didn't talk about that last time, and that's great. I'm liking that a lot. Hmm. I've been playing Concrete Jungle. Which came out last week.
Do you know that Ben Britton recorded his voiceover today for our game? I haven't listened to it.
And he was a very fun character in Concrete Jungle.
He plays the mayor.
I should stop playing with this straw that's making this sound.
I didn't even hear a sound. I didn't know you were playing with a straw. So continue.
Well, there you go. My microphone's inferior to what my expectations are of it.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, Concrete Jungle's fantastic. It's like a cross between a card game, a board game, and SimCity. That's like a management strategy sort of thing. But what I really like about it, it's like SimCity, except it's a lot more in your face and, it's, how can I put this, Francisco? The numbers are always there. In a simulation like SimCity, a lot of the time the numbers are hidden from you. So, despite the fact that, you know that this is going to boost this and this is going to boost that, you know, the fire station is going to boost safety and the hospital is going to make people happy in a certain way, you don't often see how the numbers work, and it's very much a juggling act, kind of blind, whereas in this, you see the numbers right in front of your face. So that makes it a lot simpler, and it plays like a card game, but I've been playing a lot of that. I actually finished it, like, 3 days after it was released. I kind of crunched that thing. It took me about 15 and a half hours to beat the game, although some of that I spent grinding.
Oh.
But, yeah. I'm liking that a lot. I kickstarted this project a while ago, And I really love the way it looked, and I love the way it looks still. I love the sound of it. There's a lot of spelling errors, I'll say this, but the writing's actually really, really on point. It's fantastic.
Well, that's good.
So, yeah, I'll forgive it for that. It really made me laugh, like, for a thing. I love SimCity 3000 because it had this really great aesthetic, really quirky and unique. And then when it came to SimCity 4, they took that away and they replaced the interesting people with just, like, Sims so that you can import your Sims into the game. But it was way less interesting, way less cool. I hate it when games do that. Yeah. I noticed from Guitar Hero 3 to Guitar Hero World Tour, they went from, like, 6 unique characters that all look different. They were all stereotypes, but at least they were all different to, like, just create your own thing, but they're all boring and the same. And I was like, oh. Anyway, so Concrete Jungle's great. I finished that. Did I talk about Satellite Rain last time we podcasted?
You did, yes.
Okay,
because right, I joked when you got Concrete Jungle and I saw that you were still awake at like 4 in the morning. I was like, oh, look, it's the new Satellite Rain.
Mm.
And you denied it as is, you know, the tactics of people who are addicted to those sorts of things.
I don't believe I even heard what you just said, so that's cool.
that's fine. Denial isn't just a river in Egypt. I say that a lot to you, don't I?
You do say that a lot. I've noticed, and last time I said it, you're like, I don't say that a lot. I'm like, well, you really do say that a lot.
I'm self-aware now. It's okay, I guess I do say
that. Now that I've pointed it out to you.
Yeah, oh well, it's fine. Yeah. If you'll allow me to interrupt real quick, because you mentioned Kickstarter, I want to just plug our friends... Sky Goblin's Kickstarter launch for The Journey Down Part 3, which just went live.
I mean, yesterday. If you haven't played any of The Journey Down by now...
I actually haven't. I haven't played much of The Journey Down. I played a little bit of the first one, so I pledged yesterday, and I pledged at the tier where you get the first two games along with the third one, so I'll have to play them all in a big chunk when it comes out. But yeah, it looks
really
cool. I
love The Journey. I love everything they've done. Like, they're incredible guys.
Yeah.
Theo is, like, one of the most talented, like, and not just talented, but really unique. He really has a strong vision, and he's not afraid to adhere very strongly to his vision. His sense of color is great, so, yeah. Hmm. Check that out.
Yeah. All right,
And I will say this, like, you know, sometimes you wonder, like, is it a one-hit thing? The Journey Down 1 was good, but the Journey Down 2 was great.
Mm.
So they're definitely getting better. And I hope,
The Journey Down 3, yeah, the Journey Down 3 looks really interesting and really pretty and really different from...
I've been following their progress on, like, the lead-up to doing it. And, yeah, they really... It's interesting, the end of the Journey Down 2, really, the setting changes... Like, immensely. So you're like, oh, wow, where's this going?
Hmm.
So that's really cool.
Yeah, it is. So yeah, go back to that Kickstarter. This ends our promotional section of the podcast.
yeah, I'm trying to remember what games that I've missed. Oh, Windward I've been playing.
Oh, okay.
As I've mentioned to you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that a lot. It's interesting. It's like a more open-ended Sid Meier's Pirates, I want to say. I don't know if that's a good...
Open-ended in what way?
Well, I'm glad you asked. Sid Meier's Pirates really has, like, a set storyline. Like, you know, your parents, you're looking for your family and everything
that.
And there's this particular guy that you're trying to defeat, as you know.
Right. Was that...
I'll focus on the 3D...
Yeah. No, I don't mean to interrupt you, but I'm curious. Was that as big a focus on the original version of Sid Meier's Pirates? Because I played the original Sid Meier's Pirates, and I remember, like, you could find treasure maps that would lead you to, like, your long-lost sister or whatever. But I think
if you play the other ones, you just start the game. But if you play the 3D one, there's, like, a 3D intro, you're all sitting around having dinner and everything like that.
So. It seems like they really played up that aspect of the game in the 3D remake. Like, that's, like,
the main
quest, so to speak.
Yeah.
So.
But,
anyway, you...
But, yeah,
you,
so I've been playing Windward, and it's more open-ended, and you just... It's almost like a board game. Like civilization kind of thing where you build up towns and in doing so you can improve your own experience. Uh-huh. But yeah, there's as much trading and doing little tiny quests. It's a lot lighter than Pirates. It's very simple, but I'm enjoying it as a just kind of sort of 20 minutes, you know, it's the evening and you just want to chill out and just do something. So, yeah, that's pretty good. I only got it because it was on sale and I'd been watching it and I'd seen really mixed reviews of it. It's not as good as Sid Meier's Pirates, but it's still very good.
Okay.
So, yeah, I've played a little bit of Dropsy, but I want to get to that this weekend because I need to see more of that. But, of course, you're going to talk about that more, so I won't dwell on that too much and steal your limelight. And also I've been playing – I just started today. I think this might be the last – is this the last one on my list? Oh, no, it's not. Star Wars Republic Commando. We talked about this. Yeah, I'm not really a big fan of it so far. I got to give it some more time, but the shooting just feels wimpy and the controls are just, you know, I don't feel like I'm in direct control. It feels a bit, I don't even know how to describe it. But and because you're shooting pew-pew laser guns, like after playing Doom so much and you're just like pushing shotguns into demons' faces and like blasting them off, suddenly I'm playing like, and it doesn't do anything. It's just like there's no impact. I don't feel like there's any impact. It feels like, ugh.
Is that actually what they sound like?
Probably. Well, it's Star Wars sounds. You know what Star Wars sounds like.
I have a general idea of what Star Wars sounds like.
You've played some Star Wars games. If you haven't seen the movies, you've at least played some Star Wars games. Yeah. I know, because we've talked about this.
Well, I played Rebel Assault. I like how there was that silence of judging.
I don't know what to say. I've got both Rebel Assault games. I can't pick on you.
Okay. You've got them, but have you played them?
Not much.
See, I used to like Rebel Assault when I was a kid. I haven't played it since...
You used to like Torrent's Passage.
Yeah, but the last time I played Rebel Assault was roughly around the time I last played Torrent's Passage. So my opinion of Rebel Assault could have changed by then, you know.
Yeah, I played a little bit of Rebel Assault. I've played a little bit of a lot of those style games and just gone,
Oh, well.
Anyway. But I'm also... I played a little bit of that, and, you know, I saw... It was interesting. There's some tactical options.
Is that interesting in my definition of interesting?
No, it's genuinely interesting, some of the things they tried to do, because you lead a squad... And they give you tactical options, but the tactical options that so far feel very light, feel very inconsequential, to the point where you basically just do the thing. Like, you don't really make the decisions. The game tells you exactly which decisions you have to make so far. So maybe I need to get further in before making that judgment. But we'll see. And also, I just started playing today because I listened to... the Dust Nostalgia podcast, which everybody should go and listen to, with Anatoly. And
who didn't
Richard
show up
Butcher
to the drink night last night? Shame on you, Anatoly. But to be fair, the weather was kind of crappy. It's pretty crappy weather today, too, so I can understand. Anyway.
Yeah. Anyway, he had Richard Goodness on, who we both know, and
who's moving to the West Coast today, apparently.
Today's the day. But they were talking about Might and Magic games, and I love, like, role-playing games. And he was loading the praise on Might and Magic 1. And I love the zine games. I never finished them, but I played a bit of them, and I adore them, just for their quirkiness, silliness, and cuteness, and very cute graphics. And he kept talking about Might and Magic 1, and I thought, it's finally time to go and try Might and Magic 1. I'd already bought it on GOG, so I already had it. So I downloaded it and I started playing it. And I've been really enjoying it. It's like really, really, really good. I've been making maps of the places because you have to draw the maps as you like.
Of course.
That's just how it goes. I've been really enjoying it a lot. But I'm playing it right now as we do the podcast. And I want to demonstrate there's one PC speaker sound little tune thing that happens when you win a battle. And hopefully I can win a battle. I've just unmuted my laptop. And hopefully I can win a battle in a minute and show you... That's like the best you won a battle sound on a PC speaker I have ever heard.
I like the little blah at the end.
Yeah, it's a little, it's sort of like a little, glissando, like yeah. up to the. It's like running up the scale.
That's actually really cool for a PC speaker tune.
Like 1986 New World Computing. What a beautiful thing.
Yeah, wow.
So, yeah, but it's actually, this is really cute. I put up my map of Saw Pickle Town on Twitter, someone was like...
Did you just say Saw Pickle Town?
No, I don't know how to pronounce it, but someone was like, oh, dude, I can tell you didn't explore the cells enough, and I went underneath the town and found, like, a thing that was like, yeah, the jail's got hidden stuff, so I went back there. I'm actually going through that at the moment, and it's kicking my butt.
I see. Well, good. Sorry.
But, as I know that I'm weird for liking mapping.
It's just a different aspect of gameplay that, you know, you're totally within your rights to like mapping.
Well, I like drawing stuff, and making a map of a world really feels like exploring to me, and as we all know, exploration
is
to
gameplay.
Me is gameplay. Yes. Yeah. I love the act. To me that really feels like more than using shit on other shit.
Yeah.
Mapping out a dungeon, to me, is more redolent of going on an adventure.
I wonder, do you say redolent more than I say Denial's not a river in Egypt? Or is it the other way around? Because you say redolent a lot.
Well, a lot of things are redolent of a lot of things, Francisco.
I'm aware, but anyway. Yeah. Well, maybe you just have the soul of a cartographer.
Maybe. I mean, I think maps are really beautiful. I used to love, like, playing Arcanum and, like, wandering around the world map, and they'd have all the little details. Like, you know the old maps where they've got they do have pictures drawn on the corners of them, and there's, like, these mythical creatures and stuff like that?
Yes. Like mermaids and dragons and things.
Yeah, things like that. And it's like, it really brings to life this idea of like this fantastic voyage that you go on.
Hmm.
So, doing a map to me is kind of like that. And also, I've played a lot of role-playing games, but I never got into dungeon crawlers much, you know. They're hard to play.
Yeah. I don't think I've really played too many dungeon crawlers, but they don't seem like they'd be...
Did you ever play Lands of Lore?
No, I didn't.
I know you... I remember you talking about the box and you remembered it from the Westwood catalog. But
yeah.
They're hard. They're built to be hard. But at the same time, Sierra Adventure games are built to be hard.
Yeah. Well, they're built to have you spend money on calling the hint line or buying the hint books.
I've only started enjoying these sorts of games lately that I've become a more patient gamer. Like Conquest of Camelot. I talk about that a lot on here, and I praise it a lot, but let's not, like, mince words. The combat in that is terrifyingly hard.
Absolutely. It's not
like,
well,
it took me forever to beat the combat in those games.
Yeah.
In that game.
Luckily, there's not too much of it.
No, there's two fairly tough battles, one being a little bit tougher than the other.
Yeah.
But I don't even know how I beat the Saracen at the end. It was a massive fight.
Yeah.
It's
funny, too, because it's a massive fight, but it's also really sluggish and really just, like...
And you get slower as you go, which is really cool, actually. I've never seen that in any other game.
Yeah. So.
Have you?
No, not that I can think of. Right offhand, anyway.
Hmm.
I don't know. Been playing anything else, or is that your list? Or was there anything else you wanted to say about Might and Magic?
I will say this. Don't play Might and Magic if you hate mazes, because it is maze the game, and then you die constantly the game.
Well, okay. Well, they cannot be worse.
I mean, I'm just about to level up.
Level up.
No, I'm not. Gather gold, now I level up. I'm now level 2. I've got one really thing I like about Might and Magic. Sorry. I really should say this before I let you go, because I don't want to interrupt you. One thing I should say about Might and Magic is it reminds me a lot of Dark Designs 1.
Okay.
And Dark Designs 1, I've probably talked about this on here, was an RPG that John Carmack made, I think 1991. Correct me if I'm wrong, people.
Isn't it CGA?
It is in CGA, yeah. really like about that is it's simplified. You've got, it's still hard, and there's still spells and everything like this, but you've got three character classes and four character slots. So you never feel like, oh, I've chosen the wrong thing, you know? You just, it's pretty easy. You pick two warriors, one wizard, and one priest, and that's just, you don't have to think, oh, did I pick the wrong thing? Like Baldur's Gate, the first time I played Baldur's Gate, the first three character selections I picked, I ended up having to start over because I picked the wrong thing. I was like, oh, I'm going to, this is no good. No. You know, so Might and Magic's the same in that there are six character classes, but your party is six characters.
Okay.
So it was very easy for me to start the game up and just, I rolled up a party real quick. Like Baldur's Gate, I will spend an hour rolling a character, like trying to get it right, or half an hour, maybe not an hour, but an hour. Whereas in this, I just loaded the game up, started, and I was going and confident that I'd chosen the correct choice.
Oh, good.
So that was really nice. And as much as it is a difficult game to get into and it's hard and all that, you know, wow, 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 I'm sad because games are difficult and I'm bad at them. Because despite all of that, I really still really felt like, oh, okay, I got this, you know. I'm down with this. I know what this is. It's still, there's still a lot to get used to. I've died a lot. But you die a lot in King's Quest games.
Yeah.
You know?
I suppose you do.
So, man, are you kidding me? Like, now that I've started playing King's Quest games, when I play King's Quest 5 and 6, both of them, I save constantly, like, a miserable amount.
Yeah, that's what you have to
that
do.
That was fun, because that's, they tell you, save early, save often. These games are the same. In Might and Magic, Richard Goodness really summed it up really, really well on Anatoly's podcast. And if you're at all interested, I do recommend you go and listen to it, because he's a lot more experienced about the game than I am. But he summed it up as this. He said, you don't save your progress in the game. You save your characters, but the world returns back to normal every time you return to an inn. But it's never wasted because you're exploring more stuff on your map. So very, very rarely is a play session wasted. Whereas a lot of the times I play a roguelike or something like that when I'm on the toilet or on the lunch break or something like that. And a roguelike, your time is often wasted. It doesn't feel like you. Some of them, like Rogue Legacy and stuff, they keep a bit of progress or, you know, gold carries over to the next game. But a lot of the time, your progress is wasted. It never feels like it's wasted in this because the world is persistent, consistent. Sorry, not persistent because the world resets each time, but it's a consistent world. There's not stacks and stacks and stacks of random encounters. It's actually really, really polite with the random encounters. I was impressed. Because usually you play something and you just get so many random encounters, you just die. You just go, oh, I'm going to die so much. But this is actually really polite with them. It's actually really pleasant to play if you don't mind making a map as you go. But well, yeah, I
sounds like I a ringing endorsement to me.
Well, yeah, I like I said, I don't want to oversell it and like and say it's not something. That is something that's not, because it's definitely a hard old game from before I was born, you know.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's very cool. Very, very cool.
Oh, good.
So, yeah, sorry for rambling.
No, it's fine.
About a
no.
You know.
Don't ever apologize for rambling. That's what we do.
Okay. What have you been playing, Francisco?
I'm trying to remember what I've been playing, actually.
Well, you played Dropsy, that's one.
Yeah, okay, so I played Dropsy, which, as everyone should know, is a kickstarted game by Jay Tholen, who is a lovely, lovely man who has an amazing beard.
Floridian.
He is a fellow Floridian. So I have to confess, I may be in New York now, but I'm always going to be a Floridian at heart. Anyway.
Okay.
I have to confess a little bit of pride that something actually came out of Florida that was good, that wasn't like crazy man has sex with alligator and then jumps off a bridge.
Dude, Florida news headlines are just terrifying.
I know they are. Anyway, so yeah, I played Dropsy, which is a great game. It was really, really nice, and it was really interesting to see how well it succeeded at conveying emotion and ideas with just picture text and mumbling. The soundtrack was amazing. I bought the soundtrack because
I have to say, amazing. Even though you say it's just picture text, there's a lot of animation.
Oh no, like, absolutely. There's animation too. But I mean, well,
like it feels like it feels like he had a set range of like this is the emotions I want Dropshire to feel, and like there's reactions that you'll see over and over again. You go, I know what that means because it conveys the language so well.
Right? Yeah.
You become expectant of that language. It actually develops a very visual language because you see this stuff over and over. You go, I know what that means.
Yeah,
I really like that.
Also, there is an actual language in the game, which
there is.
If you were set on it, you could decode like in Fez. But I think
I've thought about it.
Yeah, I think it's more rewarding than the Fez one, to be honest.
Well, I didn't find the Fez one rewarding at all.
Yeah, so that's saying something. Anyway, it was really good. The soundtrack's amazing. I bought it. I have you listened to it? I got you a copy of the soundtrack because
I like to experience soundtracks in games before I.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense.
Because when I get to the soundtrack, it makes me nostalgic for certain bits in the game. But we've already discussed a couple of bits with the soundtrack. Really, really did. And I have to say this: there's a lot of music in the game.
There is a lot of music in the game.
There's a ton of it, which is amazing.
Because Chris Schlarb did the main stuff, but there's a bunch of tracks in there that Jay himself actually did as well, which is pretty cool. So, yeah, Dropsy, check it out if you haven't. It's gotten a lot of praise, and it's well-deserved. And there's apparently an update, actually it recently updated, and there's an update forthcoming that opens up an area that is not accessible currently, which is an interesting idea.
I think Jay said he ran out of time.
Yeah.
And obviously you don't want to throw stuff in that's not polished enough.
Right. So it's cool that they're allowing him to do that and that you know, that'll be a thing. So I'm curious to see how it'll tie into the main story, because, I mean, obviously you can finish the main story without that section, so we'll see. Anyway.
Yes.
So I played Dropsy. I've been playing slowly through the Dagger of Amon-Ra, and that has been interesting to re-experience.
I didn't know you didn't tell me you'd been playing that again.
Oh, I thought I had. Yeah, I've been playing.
You mentioned that you wanted to.
No, yeah,
and you mentioned that you wanted to play through Quest for Glory 4 on Twitter the other day.
Oh, no, I didn't want to. October is my favorite month, and it makes me think of Quest for Glory 4. I want to do a whole series playthrough, but I haven't gotten around to it. But yeah, no, I've been playing here and there little bits of the Dagger of Amon-Ra because Jess has never played it, and so I'm playing it with her so she can experience it for the first time. We've had a couple of play sessions, but you know, we've been busy, so it's been taking a little longer than normal.
Is she solving the puzzles, or are you doing that?
Well, I'm driving and she's telling me what to do, basically.
Okay.
What else have I? Oh, I played Creavers, which is a nice little platformer that was done by Muse Games, which Jess told me about because she actually worked on it and was the voice of one of the characters. And it's a nice little platformer. You can get it on Steam and on iOS. You basically play as like five little Creavers who each have their own little ability, and you go through the forests and pick up light motes, and there's enemies, but you kind of just you stun them, and if you die, you don't die, you become overwhelmed. It's very non-violent and very sweet, and it's
fun. That's very polite.
It is very polite, and it's got this nice little, I don't want to spoil too much, but it's got a lot of attention to detail as far as, like, the character animations. The characters are very, very, even though they don't speak, they have very distinct personalities, and they all do very funny things when they have idle animations and things, and they're just really cool. And one guy voiced all four of the Creavers, and Jess voiced one of them too, and so it was funny. I was making fun of her. Going,
how mean! You're a horrible person.
I know.
No, you're right.
Yeah, I bought, but I haven't played Valiant Hearts: The Great War, which I keep meaning to try, but I got distracted because I finally fulfilled my self-fulfilling prophecy, and I got a PlayStation 4. And I've been playing Batman Arkham Knight. And I know Richard Cobbett posted a very in-depth review of it, and he really did not like most of it. And I have to say I tend to agree with the bit about the Batmobile being terrible. I think I described it to you as the driving mechanics of GTA 4, but if only the roads were slipperier and the car itself was like a giant thing. Because essentially it's a tank, and it has an afterburner. So if you go really fast and you try and take a corner and you brake, odds are the tank is just going to slide into the wall and crash, and you're going to lose your momentum. And, I mean, it's kind of a pain in the ass, but I'm getting slowly used to it. But, I mean, the game itself, you know, it's nice, it looks nice, it's more Batman, but it's also, it's introduced a few different things, but it also does this thing that I find kind of annoying, which is Batman narrates everything even more than usual, so it's like, they tell you, oh, Master Bruce, there's this puzzle you must solve, and if instead of, like, letting you solve it, Batman says, maybe I should use my remote control Batarang to do this, you know? So it's like...
I found that a lot in... I mean, I found a lot that the early Batman games... Well, not the early Batman games, that Arkham Asylum and Arkham City led you around by the hand anyway.
Yeah, this one really leads you around by the hand. I'm kind of curious as to when the tutorial mode is going to end, because... I've been playing it for a few hours now, and it's still now and then every now and then says, oh, do this. It has an option to turn hints on and off, but I don't know exactly to what extent that will help with that problem. But, yeah.
I mentioned this to you the other day, and I think it's hilarious that people still take a thing called the Batmobile seriously.
Yeah, that's... It's tricky to do that sort of thing, especially... depending on, like, if you're trying to go for a more serious experience. I mean, I guess the Arkham
games... The Batman games that I played, the first two, there's a few comical moments, but most was like... Whoa, whoa, whoa. And they're like, you know, you just punch constantly.
Yeah,
and when you're
not
punching, you're hiding, waiting to punch. And it's like, you know, there's all this grimness and everything like that.
Well, Batman...
And then to introduce something called the Batmobile into that, I mean, I know there's Batarangs, but imagine if I was like, oh, dude, I gotta go to the town, I'm just gonna take the Batmobile to the store, and like, you wouldn't be able to help but laugh, because it's stupid.
I think the problem with Batman, specifically, is the fact that, you know, it started off as the comics in the late 40s, and it wasn't exactly, you know, Detective Comics or whatever. I'm not really too familiar with that. I don't know what the tone was, but I get the impression that it wasn't super serious. And then,
I can't comment, but it was a different time. It was very much a different time.
But then you had the 60s TV show, which introduced the camp, you know, psychedelic thing.
I used to watch that as a kid. Like,
so
I used to
watch
reruns of that. It was
Batman.
So how they used to turn the camera sideways to make them walk up the building with the rope.
That was great. And, you know, the bam, biff, pow, zot sort of sound effects. But that, I think, is what introduced the whole idea of the bat everything. Because he literally had, like, the bat shield, the bat whistle, the bat shark repellent. He literally did have bat shark repellent. So...
Yeah.
So I think that's kind of where the whole and what stuck was the whole Batmobile thing. So when this whole idea, I guess, I don't know if it was Frank Miller who led the pioneering charge to make Batman grim and gritty. Because, I mean, yeah, Batman's origin story is pretty sad. I mean, his parents get shot in front of him and he decides to dress up as a bat to scare people. You know, you can turn that around and make that gritty, and they obviously did. But then you have a few leftovers from the nonsense of the 60s, and, you know, you've got characters like Calendar Man.
Dude, you've got characters like Penguin. He's a penguin.
Well, he's not a penguin. He's just short and goes, wah, 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 wah.
He's a penguin.
Yeah, I guess. I haven't actually run into him yet in Arkham Knight. He makes a little appearance at the beginning in the intro, as does Two-Face, but... Yeah.
I think the worst thing about Batman is, even though, you know, they do the thing like, oh, this character's gone, you always know who you're fighting. There's no mystery there. Even when they're like, oh, it's someone else this time, you know it's not going to be someone else.
Oh, well, I have to say this, it's not the Joker in Arkham Knight.
It doesn't matter, it's still one of the three people that he's always against.
No, actually, they tried to mix things up. I already know who the Arkham Knight is, and it's kind of... interesting, sort of, but it's also kind of cheap, because it comes out of left field if you don't know anything about Batman like me. So, anyway. But one thing I will say is that they did do a pretty clever thing with the Joker. So that's cool. But yeah, this isn't the Batman podcast, so we'll move on. I also have Bloodborne, but I haven't played that yet. But it looks really interesting. And the most interesting thing so far has been doing the butt thing with my hand CT.
Do you think you're going to go back to the PS3 games you haven't finished? Or is that it? You're pretty much done for now.
Oh, no, no. I'm going to go back to the PS3 games. Which, actually, thank you for saying that, because that reminds me. I got back into Grand Theft Auto 5, and I'm trying to do 100% completion on GTA 5.
Goodness.
So, yeah. I was telling you, too, like, it's interesting to me to see the differences, the graphical differences between the PS3 and the PS4. It's not as huge a leap between PS2 and PS3, obviously, but it's there when you go back and look at, like, some of the remastered games. I mean, the games that have been developed specifically for PS4, like Arkham Knight looks a lot nicer than the previous games. I mean, Arkham City and Arkham Origins, I mentioned before I had played through them. Arkham Asylum looks dated a bit, especially with, like, the other character models. Arkham Origins and Arkham City are nicer looking, but with Arkham Knight, it's like certain things like his cape and like lighting effects and things like that are really nicer looking. And when you look at like the remastered stuff on PS4 and compare them to the originals, yeah, I mean, it's the same graphics, but it just looks like they tweaked the lighting settings and stuff to make them look more consistent. So I guess what I'm trying to say is that, yes, there's a graphical improvement on PS4, but it's not such a huge mind-blowing one that I've noticed yet. But we'll see as more games come out.
Well, also, if you're updating graphics, it's never going to be the same as making something for the platform.
Yeah, of course, of course. I mean, I can already say, just in like the intro to Arkham Knight, I was impressed with like the facial animation on the NPCs, which, you know, you never got that much detail in PS3 games. Even with games like L.A. Noire, you know, you never got that much. But so yeah, it'll be interesting to see how the medium progresses and how much further into the uncanny valley we'll fall.
How's the controller and everything?
Oh yeah, you asked me about the controller and the D-pad. The D-pad, I would say, is pretty much identical to the PS3 controller. The one thing that threw me off a little bit is that there's no start button. There's an options button, which pretty much works like the start button in most games. And there's a share button, which obviously you press to take a screenshot and upload it on Twitter, as I've done a couple of times. But then the weirdest thing is the center thing. I don't know if you've looked at the PS4 controller, but it's got this
sort of... It's a touch thing.
Yeah, it's a touch thing. I haven't quite figured it out yet. As aside from just like being able to move your sort of mouse cursor esque thing in the normal UI to like select letters when typing things, but
yeah, they've got a touchpad on the back of the PlayStation Vita, and there's one game that they use it in, and it's a launch game, a launch exclusive. So you know,
right?
They basically shoehorned it in there. I mean, they shoehorned it in very, very, very well.
Is it Tearaway? But,
yeah, it is.
Yeah. Can you press down on the touchpad on the Vita?
How do you mean?
Like
you've got a touch screen at the... You can't click it.
Right, okay. That's what I mean. Yeah, because you can click the touchpad on this, on this, and it functions, at least in Arkham Knight, it functions like the old select button on the PS3.
Okay.
To like access the map and things like that. Which took me a really long time to notice. Because I was like, how do I find the map? And then
Is there not a manual?
No, there is no manual in Arkham Knight, no. I mean, it shows you, but I was like, what the hell button is that? Because it just looks like a white waffle. And I'm like, what the hell? Oh, I see, it's a touchpad. And then, like, can I click it? Oh yeah, I guess I can. So it was a learning experience.
Yeah, I'm still not used to clicking down on thumbsticks when they say R3 or L3. Yeah. I hate that, because I always end up bumping it.
The thumbsticks are different. They don't have the same sort of nice little texture as the PS3. They're just kind of like plastic discs, but that's fine. So yeah, that's basically all I've been playing. I think. Okay. Unless I missed something, which I doubt I did, because I don't play as many games as you do, so.
It's true.
Yep. So, moving on to this week's topic. So I've been thinking a lot lately about my next game, even though, you know, we're still in full swing in production of Shardlight. Oh, by the way, I mentioned on Twitter the other day that we had gotten, or that we might get a, or I don't remember, either we might or we did get a famous or a well-known voice actor to be in our game. I already mentioned Ben Britton, but as it turns out, we did get this well-known voice actor in our game. And I think I should announce it here on the podcast and on the podcast only, because then only you loyal listeners will get the exclusive scoop. So, in a complete weird turn of events, we got Mike Pollock, who is the voice of Dr. Eggman in the Sonic games, to be in our game.
Which is... So I'd never heard of this person, but I don't know any... You said to me, like, oh, he's been in the Sonic game since 2006, and I have to admit, I was like, have you even played a Sonic game?
Well, no,
that
I haven't.
Came out since 2006? I haven't. I played Sonic Rush last, which was 2005.
I haven't,
and that was great.
But I did, right before Adventure X last year, Drew DDQ was here, and he and I watched several videos from Sonic 2006, and that game was terrible. But... You know, his acting as Eggman was good. So,
okay.
So yeah, I just find it amusing that we have a... I feel like we should be able to tap into the Sonic fan base and get them to buy Shardlight, and we'll be millionaires.
I don't think that's a good idea.
Probably not.
I really do not think that's a good idea.
Probably not. So, yeah, he's apparently the narrator in Pokemon also, so... And he's been in a bunch of anime... Oh, man! So, I, as an aside, too, so, our mutual friend and probably listener, Miranda, she is also in Shardlight, but she was also in another game that got announced, the cast list got announced recently, and it features Mike Pollock as well, and Crystal Lundquist, who is in our game as well, and it also features Frank Chavez, who is the voice of Fernando in the GTA series, and I was like, well, that's pretty cool. I know you don't know much and don't care much about voice actors, but I find it cool.
It's not that I don't care much, it's just not a field I'm very experienced in.
Okay, fair enough. I'm a huge nerd and I know, like, what voice actors did what, and yeah, it's pretty sad. Anyway, so yeah, moving on to the topic, as I said. So even though, yeah, Shardlight's, we're still in production of that, I'm, you know, thinking
ahead. Sure are, yeah, golly. Yeah.
Gee whiz. I'm thinking about my next game and the kind of things I want to do and what I want to try and new things and things like that. And I've been thinking a lot about what makes an adventure game, and if it's possible to take away the things that are generally associated with adventure games and still be able to call your game an adventure game. So I guess, first of all, we should probably start by asking the question... What exactly makes an adventure game? Because, I mean, to paraphrase our friend Joe on the Upper Memory Block podcast, he always describes an adventure game as more or less a story-driven game where you, as the player character, are given a quest or a task that you must complete, and on the way to complete that main quest or task, other obstacles present themselves which you must then overcome, and at some point there's a story or something.
Mm-hmm.
Would you agree that that's basically what an adventure game is?
Yeah, ostensibly that's it.
Yeah. Because, I mean,
how do you define an adventure game? Seeing as this is your thing, how do you define... Because I know how I define an adventure game, so I'm curious how you define an adventure game.
Well, I pretty much define it like that. I mean, it's basically a game... where you play as a character who has to do something and overcome obstacles in order to do that. Although that description could be applied to any game. I mean, in a
right. See, that to me, that's a little bit. Well, that's a lot, especially in the modern era when shooting games and action games all have stories and are all based around a big plot. That's too general for me. That works for 90s games, I think, or 80s games.
Yeah.
'Cause I mean, but no, to me, an adventure game is a game via which progress is made through exploration and observation of your surroundings and the characters within it,
mm-hmm.
and the uncovering and furthering of a plot without the reliance on combat or strategy.
Right.
Or management.
Right.
It's purely through interaction with the environment. All the puzzles, not purely, because you've got a lot of exceptions, but it's mostly through observation of the environment and interaction of the environment and exploration of the environment mm-hmm. and characters and people's stories. You know, so if a guy goes in a shooter game, I hate bats, you're just going to go, oh, that's who he is, that's part of his character. But if a guy goes, I hate bats in an adventure game, and you need to get past him, you're going to look for a bat. That's the right. whole idea. You're right. observing, you're exploring, and those two things come together in order to help you progress through the game.
Does he mean bats like squeak, squeak, or does he mean bats like hit a home run?
I don't care. It's really, really irrelevant.
I know. I'm just presenting the idea of that if it's a comedy adventure game, it'll probably be a pun and you'll have to figure
out. Oh, sure, but that's the thing. That's the whole thing, is that to me, story these days, especially when you've got all these Call of Duties and Uncharteds and Grand Theft Autos where they've all got, you know, they're all trying to tell a story.
Mm-hmm.
That's not so much consideration. It's more a 90s, 80s thing that's the thing.
Yeah. I mean, I would say that, yes, story is very important in an adventure game, but would it be possible to have an adventure game? I mean, there are plenty of adventure games from the old days that don't really have much in way of the story, where it's basically just, this is a very basic thing. Well, look at King's Quest. Look at the original King's Quest. There's no story there. It's basically just, oh, the king is dying. Here is the knight. Go collect the treasures. Now you are the king. The end.
Yeah. It's more... To me, yeah, even in those old games, you know, if you look at stuff that was coming out around the time that Mystery House came out, or even Adventure, let's look at, you know, really old school games. If you look at stuff like that, a lot of the games that you were playing there were very simple. You had a spaceship and you shoot the things that are falling. You know, you have sort of one character that you move between platforms and you jump them around and you avoid obstacles.
Mm-hmm.
Or you're King Graham. Or, you know, in Mystery House, you've got a murder in the house and you have to find out who did it. That's a lot more complex, a lot more advanced than move the spaceship and don't get hit by the bullets while hitting with the other bullets.
Right. Well, because they require different levels of skill, you know.
Absolutely. You know, and Roberta Williams was inspired by playing Adventure. She said herself she got stuck into that game and she glued herself to the screen. She said herself, she's like, I neglected my kids, I neglected the housework, I just sat at the computer and wanted to solve these puzzles.
That's why she hired poor little Paco to do the housework for her.
Right, but you know, that's why her puzzles are all so hard, because she spent a month solving shitty puzzles in a shitty text adventure.
Right.
You know, and I'm not saying Adventure's a bad game, but if you tried playing it today, you'd hate it.
Probably.
Because they have a two-word parser, and it was built in BASIC, and a lot of the times the stuff back then being built in BASIC, if you wanted to solve a problem, you just opened up the source code and you dug through and like, oh, that's what I gotta do.
That's cheating.
And?
And it's when not right.
When the puzzles are designed around that, that's what you got to do.
Yeah, I guess.
Dude, they didn't have hints. It was designed by a guy called Crowther. I've told you this story.
Yeah,
and probably. It just got randomly you know, distributed around between whoever, and then a guy called Woods found it, and he wanted to further the development of it because the game wasn't finished by the guy that made it, and. The version of Adventure that got widely distributed by everyone that distributed it in a big sense was not the version that Crowther put up. There was a guy called Woods who actually wanted to find Crowther, and the only credits on the game at all were just by Crowther. So he emailed Crowther at every single domain of email that existed, which at the time, you know, the 1970s, there wasn't that much. But still, he was like the world's first spam bot. But yeah, so you've got this game that was developed with this really hacker mindset, you know? Mm. And then Roberta Williams sort of got inspired by that. And it was just about exploring a world.
Mm.
You know, so that was the thing. It was not so much about a story, mm-hmm. just exploring a big world. And that's why I love adventure games. I've talked about exploring way too much.
Yeah. Yeah, but let's take the flip side of that, because another thing that a lot of people expect in an adventure game, I mean, the knee-jerk reaction that you think of when you think adventure game is puzzles. And you can have games that are focused on narrative that don't really have puzzles. I was just playing Kentucky Route Zero the other day at the
There's no puzzles in that.
Yeah, there's really no puzzles in that, but it's all about just the story. And it's weird because it's not even trying to tell you a specific story. It's letting you write the story, in a sense. Because, have you played it? I forget.
Yeah, I've played Kentucky Route Zero.
All of them up to date so far?
I've played 1 and 2.
Okay. Because I had only played a very small amount of 1. I played a little bit more this time. I got up to the bit where you leave the mines. And
you really don't stick with Kentucky Route Zero for very long.
Well, it was at the New York Film Festival. I wasn't going to stand there and play the whole thing.
I see. Okay.
Yeah, no, it's on my list, believe me. I keep meaning to get it and I never get around to it. But yeah, I just found it really interesting how, like, there's sort of puzzles. Like, there's the bit at the very beginning with the people sitting at the table, and it's like, oh, we lost our die, it glows in the dark, and you figure out to turn off your lantern, and oh, there it is, and you know. But it's not like you need to really do that. I guess you kind of do, to progress the story. But then, like, you get this option of, like, keep it with you, or put it on the table, or whatever, and then, you know, you keep going. But there's really not a lot of, like, you know, traditional adventure game, oh, I need to figure out this problem beyond...
It's rare, like, that you get stuck.
You know, right, exactly. It pushes you along, which amused me because, not to toot our own horn, but Shardlight was featured as well in this little display, and it was next to Kentucky Route Zero, and there was someone playing it, and I kind of, every now and then, would look over to see how they were doing. And the section was our prologue, and there were people that were stuck on it, and it amused me to see just the difference in the design. Like, I've been playing Kentucky Route Zero for 15 minutes, and I've been able to progress quite a bit, and the person next to me has been playing our game for 15 minutes, and they're still, like, in the same three rooms. So, This isn't, by the way, to say that our game is ridiculously stupidly tough or anything. It's just, you know, people aren't necessarily used to adventure game puzzles. So yeah,
I think the thing with Kentucky Route Zero is it's very much, well, to me, it's very much an experiment in form.
Mm.
And it's about using a form that's familiar, but going beyond that form to create something and evoke something that we're not used to evoking from it. A lot of times, the sort of atmosphere that gets evoked from something like Kentucky Route Zero is impossible in an adventure game because you're too busy trying to solve the puzzles.
Right.
Whereas Kentucky Route Zero, a lot of the gameplay is optional and you don't have to do it at all. You just drive around the roads and find these random places and you go in there and it has no bearing on the greater narrative at all.
Hmm.
Whereas in an adventure game, most of the stuff has a greater bearing on the main narrative.
Mm-hmm.
When you do something, you expect it to have some tying in to that main narrative.
Right.
Which is where the story focus comes in, I think.
Well, that's kind of a thing that Dropsy did that was interesting.
That's right, yeah.
Is that there's side quests, so to speak. I mean, you generally are encouraged to help everyone who's unhappy, but you don't have to help everyone. It's not required to finish the game. And of course, the more you help people and the more they like you, you know, it kind of has an effect on the end bit, but it doesn't affect the ending per se. So, yeah, it's interesting to see it when adventure games do things like that. We talked about, you mentioned that you've made two games without inventories, and as I recall, those were exclamation mark and what was the other one?
And Heed was the other one.
Ah, Heed, right.
They were very much. I felt myself stuck in a kind of rut of design where, oh, this is the thing. And I tend to design puzzles around a few core concepts, you know, of observe a thing, do a thing based on the observation.
Right.
And I thought, I want to try and step away from that. How can I make games that don't rely on inventory items so much? So that's why I restricted myself in that way. Because you asked me the other day, you said, oh, can a game be made without inventory? I said, yeah, I've done it twice.
Yeah.
You still have the same things of observing something and making actions based on observations and conclusions you draw from those observations. That doesn't change. It's just the mechanisms in which you employ that change.
Yeah. That's one thing. The reason I asked is because that's one thing I'm considering is limiting inventory use or maybe just not having an inventory at all. Because, yeah, like, there's, you know, there's more interesting ways to solve puzzles than just use every item on everything else, you know? That's usually the sign that you failed when you see someone playing your game and they're just, like, clicking every item on everything.
It depends. A lot of the time I see games like, I mean, the Shiver didn't really have inventory items, but the alternative that it had were ideas which acted as inventory items.
Right, yeah.
You know, I mean, you could say, oh, you know, I got a clue about a person, but instead of having the clue in your notebook, you could just have a matchbook with the address on. You know, it's the same sort of
don't
thing.
Don't do that.
You know, I'm not...
cliche.
But you know what I'm saying. I'm not that it didn't do anything different. I'm just saying it's the same set of ideas. You're finding something that you observed in the environment, and you're using that elsewhere.
Right. I mean,
I think...
When I say
inventory,
no inventory
makes
yeah.
sense because we use items in the world. Every day we use our keys on a car or a door.
Sure.
That's just part of life. So we're used to that. It makes sense to us.
Yeah, no, that's true. I just mean like, I guess restricting inventory is like, you know, don't... Because, I mean, if you had an adventure game where every single inventory puzzle was just like find a key and unlock... Actually, I can think of a game that does that. I watched a Let's Play... a review / let's play of, I believe it's called the, I forget. It's a Lovecraft-inspired game. Tales from Innsmouth or something like that? Or the Dunwich something or other? I don't know. It's an episodic game made by people in Unity. And there's two chapters, and the second chapter I saw, or two episodes, the second episode I saw, every single puzzle was literally find a key and then find the door that it unlocks. That was it for the inventory. So, I mean, that can get pretty tedious, but I'm thinking as far as, like, an investigative game where, you know, you don't... Like Blade Runner. Blade Runner had stuff you could pick up, but you didn't actually use any of the inventory items on anything. You could just, like, look at them and pretty much figure out how they tied into the crime scenes and things like that.
Well, that goes back to the same thing about exploring the world.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, like, if you made an adventure game, quote-unquote, that didn't have inventory, didn't really have puzzles, didn't really have a main narrative or anything like that... Well, I guess it would have to have a main narrative. How can you...
Nothing has to have anything.
Right. No, I know.
If you're experimenting with form, there is no limit.
Yeah.
I really believe that.
No, I believe it too. I want to try making a game that does not have the typical adventure game trappings.
I think for me, the best thing to look at in your catalog, and I've mentioned this game plenty of times before on the podcast.
Is it Backdoor Man?
Yeah, it's Backdoor Man because you did... Ben Jordan games were very much... I'm an adventure game. They were celebrating the form. They weren't doing anything unheard of with it. They took the form and celebrated it. And, you know, that doesn't mean that they're bad. It doesn't mean that they're good. It's just what they did.
Right.
It's not necessary to change the world. Mm-hmm. I think people get this idea of like, oh, I'm sick of the way adventure games are. I'm going to do mine different. I'm going to do mine better. You don't necessarily need to change the world.
No, you don't.
To make a good game.
You don't. I mean, that's not what I want to do and not what I'm trying to do. It's just I want to break out of the rut, like you said, and try new things and try different things and see if they work.
Yeah, an interesting thing for me is that often you find, and I find this in art, is that limitations help creativity.
Mm. Yeah, sure. It's like game jams where they say, you know, you can't use the color blue, or you can't, whatever, they give you restrictions. And yeah, people come up with some interesting stuff.
Yeah, right. So when you have that sort of, that idea, you'll often push your design into places you didn't think of doing. I know with Heat, there was points where I was just like, okay, I don't know what to do, so I'll just do whatever and see what happens, you know? And that really forces you. I know with Piss, I got sick of this sort of linear progression of adventure games, like, oh, you found the item, so you take that item to the thing and you use the item on that. They're so linear.
Yeah.
Adventure games. So I thought, well, what if I do a system whereby you have to earn money, and there's, you know, you have to earn 25 coins, but there's 45 coins you can earn around the place, so you just go around, do whatever you want to do, however you want to do it, and eventually you'll have enough money that you can get past this obstacle. It was still by exploration of the environment and talking to people, which is exploration of a character, but it was more focused on just the act of exploring until the point where the game goes, okay, you've explored enough, you can now explore the next area, then you have to explore exactly what I want you to explore before you can proceed.
Right.
So, yeah, that was what I was trying to convey with that, because I got kind of sick of... I mean, when you work on a set form for a long time, it's easy to get disenchanted with it.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, as you probably know, you've designed, yes, adventure games around a set format for so long.
Yeah.
And you go, all right, well, what else is there?
Exactly. I mean, it's kind of like, it's the same thing that Dave is doing with his next game that he's designing, where he's talked about how he wants to, like, focus on that whole thing about RPGs with the companions and things, but without the combat.
Which makes sense, especially for Dave's, because Dave loves RPGs, you know.
Right.
And that kind of reflects his love of that format of having a crew of people and seeing them develop, which I also love. I mean, right, Dave and I bonded very early over role-playing games, not adventure games. We didn't. When I first started working with Dave, we never talked about adventure games. We were always talking about, you know, Fallout and Planescape Torment, and yeah, that was just the sort of forms. And when he says, like, when I play role-playing games, I don't play them for the combat. Janet plays them for the combat. She puts them on hard difficulty mode and retries battles like 100 times.
That's funny.
Dave puts on easy mode and just blasts through the story because he loves that development of story. And I often find that role-playing games do story more justice than adventure games.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because you get a choice.
Yeah, sure.
It's a lot easier to work a choice into those mechanisms.
Yeah.
I think, than into the adventure game.
The story in Planescape Torment is probably one of the best adventure game stories that there is.
Yeah, I used to say as a kind of, you know, a phrase to upset people that Planescape Torment's my favorite adventure game.
Well, Ali...
Which isn't really fair.
Ali said the same thing. He was like, at Adventure X last year, he was doing a game thing where it was like, find the odd man out, and he would put 4 adventure games, and one of the things he had Planescape Torment, and he said, and anyone who says Planescape Torment isn't an adventure game is going to have, I don't care what you say, but it is.
So. Well, I think it really depends on how you play it, to be honest.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. It's an RPG that you can play as an adventure game, basically.
The two share so much.
They do. So.
I mean, people say, oh, there's no combat in adventure games, but there's fighting in Monkey Island, which is almost the golden child of adventure gaming.
Yeah, but it's not, like, action-controlled combat. It's not like you have to click.
Neither is some role playing game combat.
Yeah,
it's. I'm playing Might and Magic, dude, and it's all just choosing the right thing at the right time.
Right, it's basically a dialogue right puzzle. Moment.
Yeah, like, well, you get up against a group of skeletons, and you're like, okay, I've got to use Turn Undead now because I'm fighting skeletons.
Right.
So, yeah, I struggle with the thing. It was interesting listening to the Upper Memory Block podcast about the new King's Quest, which you've played and forgot to talk about.
Oh, yeah. Well, actually, no, I didn't play it. Hush. there's a reason I didn't talk about it. Anyway, I was actually meaning to listen to that podcast.
But anyway, so it was interesting. It was interesting listening to Joe talk about the new King's Quest, and sort of say, "Oh, unlike the old adventure games, you know, there's action stuff this time." But I've been playing like Conquest of Camelot and the Black Cauldron this year, and there's action stuff in there. You got to like jump between the stones. You've got to do fighting with the old pony guy, whatever, the Black Knight. You know, there's still action stuff in those games, and they're like.
Did you literally just call the Black Knight the old pony guy?
Yeah, that's who he is.
That's funny.
He rides a pony.
He doesn't ride a pony. He rides a fearsome black steed.
He rides a pony.
Isn't that a song?
And the Black Cauldron, you're like climbing up ropes and you're like jumping across stones. And I'm like, I don't know. These are adventure games of the 1980s. Like that.
Well, but... Consider the fact that the Black Cauldron and Conquest of Camelot weren't exactly the most mainstream.
I don't give a shit. They're still examples of the format.
No, that's true. But I mean, they're not. Yeah, they're games most people haven't heard of. Speaking of which, I saw something, and this is going off topic, but I saw something this week that made me laugh a lot, and that is that the people who remade Gold Rush. They're doing a sequel, which
that's amazing.
No, it's not. It's stupid.
Well, yeah, it's amazingly stupid.
It made me laugh because of the fact that it's like, oh well, they have to go back and fight Boss Tweed back in New York. It's like, why call it Gold Rush?
I knew Boss Tweed was no good.
Well,
I always knew Boss Tweed was no good.
Well, what? No, of course he's not. But what I'm saying is...
What are you talking about? Boss Tweed's not a character.
Yes, he is.
Is he?
Did you not read the description of the game?
No.
Yeah, it talks about how they're like, they have their mine, and the gangsters back in New York are like pressuring them, and they have to go back to New York and fight Boss Tweed. They don't call him Boss Tweed, but they call him Tweed, which who else is he going to be? It's Boss Tweed. In that time in New
That's
York,
hilarious.
I've seen his grave.
Pretending that Boss Tweed was a character in Gold Rush, like
no.
The Gold Rush.
No, he's an actual historical character who they're bringing in for the sequel to Gold Rush, which is stupid because why are they calling it Gold Rush then? It has nothing to do with the Gold Rush. They should call it Gangs of New York the game.
That, yeah.
It's pretty ridiculous. So,
well...
Yeah.
There's a lot of things that are ridiculous about the remake of Gold Rush and the people behind it.
Oh. Well, such as the fact that they were charging like $60 for it.
Were they charging $60 for Gold Rush?
I don't
Rush?
Know if it was $60, but it was a pretty expensive
I think
game.
That may be an exaggeration of reality.
But it was something like $40 or something like that.
Mm.
It was pretty expensive. But anyway, yes... So that I'm curious to see if that goes anywhere and if that becomes a thing because, yeah, that will be weird. Back to Brooklyn.
Brooklyn's the best part of Gold Rush, so that's cool. I just wish it was made in AGI graphics or at least SCI Zero.
Yeah, I don't know.
I think SCI Zero is my favorite of the Sierra formats that I've seen.
Remind me which one that one is.
SCI is Zero is like
Conquest
is like
of Camelot. And
yeah,
King's Quest IV and
Quest for Glory Quest. 1.
Right. Yeah. Yeah,
and
that one's
the Colonel's
right.
Bequest.
Yeah. I like that
and,
one too.
Space what's the Quest one that 3. No one likes?
Leisure
the Submarine
Larry.
One.
Oh, Codename Iceman.
Yeah, that one.
And
that
Leisure
looks fantastic. Every
2
time I look at screenshots
3.
Of that game, I'm like, I want to play this. I don't care if it's shit. I like the graphics.
It's definitely one of those
games. I played King's Quest V, alright?
Yeah, it's definitely one of those games that looks nicer in screenshots than it actually is in game.
So, well, like, okay. Yeah. Well, anyway, what were we talking about?
We were talking about adventure games and what makes them adventure games, and if you can make an adventure game that doesn't stick to the tropes and still call it an adventure game. Well, it's like Gone Home. Would you call Gone Home an adventure game? It's purely an exploration game.
Yeah, I'd call it an adventure game.
Yeah, me too. So, yeah. I don't know.
Mostly because I want a game like that to be part of our genre.
It's very selfish.
I love Gone Home, and the experience that Gone Home is for me is walking around a place and sort of taking in the story of the place. That's why I love adventure games.
Let me ask you a question. When you played Gone Home for the first time, did you expect there to be a ghost story involved? Or like the supernatural?
Yep.
Yeah, it kind of has that effect, doesn't it?
I'm sure they did it on purpose.
Probably.
But I think that's cool because it's playing with the form that you recognize. You're like, oh, I know these signs. I know what this is. You know, I've been here before. And then I like it when people subvert my expectations. Mm. I really do. They're really pleasant to me. Mm. So.
Yeah. So, yeah, basically my next game is not going to have any inventory or puzzles or anything. Just load it up and watch it explode. No, you probably don't get that reference.
No, I don't. I'm sorry.
That's okay. It's from Space Quest 4.
But yeah, that's... Then. Well, that's, of course I don't get it. You know I haven't played Space Quest 4.
Yeah.
I've never tried to play Space Quest 4. Hmm. So, sorry to the two guys from Andromeda.
I'm sure they'll forgive you.
Yep.
Anyway, I think we should probably wrap things up unless you have something else to say.
I think the interesting thing about adventure games is a lot of times when I play an adventure game, and I buy an adventure game, there's two things that happen. Either it does things that really surprise me, or
it doesn't.
It very much plays by the rules. And we were talking about a few adventure games the other day, stuff like Runaway, stuff like Jack Keane, stuff like the Book of Unwritten Tales. And every time I play something like that, I really feel like they're painting by the numbers that have already been laid out by a million guys before them. And I'm like, this isn't... And I like the idea of embracing the format, but there's a point where I think a little bit more of imagination would be nice. You know, I feel like it's like the real-time strategy genre, which kind of got stale for a while there, and you're just like, oh, it's Red Alert, it's the same. Red Alert 3, it's the same as Red Alert 2, which was the same as Red Alert 1, you know. Which is fine in some cases, like if you buy a new FIFA game, you don't expect...
Would you say that Red Alert 2 was redolent of Red Alert 1?
No, I would say it's my favorite entry in the series. But yeah, there's certain things that you go, okay, that's fine, I don't expect much from that. But there's a point I found playing those three games that I mentioned, Runaway, Jack Keane, and the Book of Unwritten Tales, where I thought, I want something more from this.
Well, I'm curious.
In other cases, like The Journey Down, they totally embrace being an adventure game. In certain points, they do make fun of like the genre. But there's actually a great bit in Number 1 which makes fun of like Mystery Puzzles that I love. That's really good. I can't wait for you to play the game. But yeah, those games really just get along well with the genre.
Well, we have a subtle little joke about mazes in Shardlight. I don't know if people will get it, but hopefully they will.
But yeah, like that's if I feel like someone is just playing by the rules and not trying to do anything different, a lot of the times I just think, oh, I wish you'd do something different, you know? When something comes along that does something different, I go, oh yeah, that's great. And often you know the feeling, you're playing a game and you just go, okay, this could be something interesting, or, you know, we'll see. And then you get to a sliding tile puzzle and you just go, okay, they were out of ideas. They just didn't give a shit at this point, you know? There's that feeling that you get sometimes with adventure game puzzles. Like, use the bottle on the carrot and just like, oh, they're out of ideas. They stop giving a shit.
Yeah.
You know, I get that it's hard to make puzzles. I'm not trying to say that they're lazy. They're obviously, as Richard Cobbett says, they're not lazy because they made a game. If they were lazy, they would have eaten chips and watched television.
Right.
But there's a point where you think, couldn't you have done something a little different?
So, you know? I'm curious, you mentioned about, you know, games like Runaway, and, I mean, we both played Runaway. So, what is it about Runaway? I know I sort of asked you this the other day, but what is it about Runaway that you feel paints by the numbers, and what is it that it could have done differently that would have shown some more imagination, in your opinion?
Well, a lot of times when you look at the writing particularly, you're mm-hmm. dealing with characters that you've seen 100 times.
Well, sure, yeah.
You know? And the puzzle format is almost always use weird thing on weird thing that somehow makes sense in a slightly weird logic.
Right, like use peanuts and butter in a helmet to mix together to make peanut butter.
Yeah, use lipstick on a gun to make bullets.
Right.
You go, oh yeah, lipstick kind of looks like bullets. I guess that makes sense.
Yeah.
But you don't enjoy solving a puzzle. In Edna and Harvey, The Breakout, you walk around this giant asylum, turning lights off and on in all the buildings, going, oh man, that's crazy, they put so much detail in. And then suddenly you realize that there's a puzzle behind all that, and it's the most amazing thing.
Hmm.
That's interesting to me.
I need to play that game too, actually.
I don't know if you'll enjoy it. It's pretty...
Really?
But yeah, that's...
Why?
Because it's pretty hardcore in terms of puzzles. It's tough.
I like puzzles, though.
Do you?
Yeah. I hate designing puzzles, but I like playing puzzles. I like that feeling of solving a puzzle and feeling, you know, that satisfaction of having cleverly solved a puzzle. As long as the puzzle is logical, of course.
A lot of the times the logic in Edna and Harvey is totally backwards, but you learn that you're playing as a deranged person, so you come up with deranged solutions. But yeah, that's one worrying. Example of a puzzle where I didn't just go, okay, they're just playing by the numbers, I got to use the stuffed toy on the thing, you know. It was actually, oh, great, you know, that's the thing. Resonance had a lot of that for me, where you're playing a thing and you're like, ah.
Right.
It wasn't just using the same old crap on stuff. I like it when games try and do something differently like that.
Okay.
So a lot of the times when I play these traditional adventure games, I just think it's a little bit like you heard your dad's music growing up mm-hmm. and it was cool, you know, but you've heard all that.
Right.
You know that. You know there's certain songs that I hear on the radio now, and I know I could just pick up a guitar and play along to them because it's following the same format that you've heard 1,000 times before.
Mm.
We've all heard a 12-bar blues progression.
Sure.
There's no difference to it. You know, as a guitarist, you can just pick up a guitar and jump in a pentatonic scale or a blues scale, and you will fit in. You don't have to think. You don't have to try.
Mm.
And then you hear some, you know, orchestral piece in an odd time signature, and you're like, man, what is this? That's the feeling that I want a game to give me.
Right.
To give me, like, oh my god, I've never... That's crazy.
Hmm.
Why can't we get that from our gameplay?
Yeah, good question.
You know, remember the first time you picked up the gravity gun in Half-Life 2?
Probably not, but yes.
And you were smashing the shit out of things, like picking up saw blades and hurling them at, like, zombies' heads?
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, man, this is something new. I've never done this before.
Yeah.
That's what I want.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't have to be revolutionary.
No, but it just has to be something.
Well, it doesn't have to be, but I appreciate it when it is.
Preferably would be something different, yes. Good.
So, yeah.
Yeah, good. Right, well.
That's what I'll say.
Good. Well, this has been a lovely little discussion. We should probably wrap things up.
We can wrap things up. That's okay.
Okay, wrap them up and put a nice little bow on them and send them to our loved ones for Christmas. I don't know where
you
came from.
You lost me with that.
I know. Anyway, so yes, thank you for listening to our podcast. You can follow us on Twitter. I am at Grundislav Games.
I am at Ben_304.
And together, we are
at BCT_podcast.
Good. So,
sorry, I just ran into an encounter that I'm like, there's no way I'm getting out of this. I'm going to die.
I'm sorry.
Do you want to hear the noise for when you die?
Yes!
You know? Okay.
Is it burr, burr, burr?
Let me turn my volume. There you go.
That's so sad.
Yeah, it is. It's really sad.
It's amazing how much emotion they can convey with little tones.
Man, they got that PC speaker and they did some things with it.
They really did. Anyway, so yes, thanks again for listening. We will see you next time. Goodbye. What?
Goodbye.